there's a drop in IQ that happens in teenagers. Mm. And we're not exactly sure how much or for how long the marijuana exposure needs to be, but it will drop IQ, and that change is irreversible.
Mm.
And so you can smoke yourself dumber, and that sticks. And so for the teenage brain, I worry so much about the kids that are smoking pot, thinking that there is no ill consequence.
Right. Yeah, you know, everybody wants to make it sound so benign and
right.
It's not a problem.
Right. Oh, it's no worse than alcohol. There's far more fatalities or health problems from alcohol. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean alcohol's not a problem too, guys.
Hello, and welcome, my friend, to this edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health. I'm Brad Hayes, your host. I want to welcome to the studio with me today a very special guest. His name is Dr. Brian Luberstedt. I still haven't gotten it right. Oh, well, if you've heard the podcast that we did together on children, well, then you'll have heard that I still couldn't pronounce it there. I can't pronounce it now. Dr. Brian is a psychiatrist, and so he's a medical doctor first, and then he's also board certified for children and adolescents. And today we want to talk about adolescents and mental health issues. And so again, I thank you very much for coming back into the studio today and sharing your time with us.
My pleasure.
You know, this is a man who's just heading into adolescence with his own children, right?
Yes, my oldest is 13, and I've joked that my daughter is 11, and she is a teenager in training, but she's showing a lot of promise.
You know, I had a psychiatrist buddy of mine tell me that girls make great teenagers.
Right.
Or they can really be a challenge, but they grow up. Boys stay teenagers forever. We men never really grow out of it. But so you're just heading into those years. I always tell people the really good news is grandchildren are God's reward to you for not hurting your own children during their puberty years. Because it would almost seem like puberty in and of itself is a mental health diagnosis.
It almost seems like it could be.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on, a lot that changes with the body and the brain during that time. But, you know, it's not a foregone conclusion. I have seen some very successful teenagers.
Yeah.
Parents maintained a very close relationship. And so it's not a given.
Right.
I'm holding on to that hope.
There's always hope. There is always hope. Never give up. Never give up. Let's just talk about teenagers and mental health issues. As we've discussed earlier in a prior podcast, that one out of five children 18 and under have a mental health diagnosis or a serious mental health issue. What would it be kind of with the teen population? Let's just say preteen and up.
Right. It's going to be largely the same as it is with kids, with especially the young ones. So again, about 8% or so of ADHD in the population under 18. That's going to be our most common mental health diagnosis. And then you're going to have some behavior issues, oppositionality. You're going to have depression. You're going to have anxiety. Difference with teenagers is there's going to be a higher likelihood of starting to see some of the signs with some of more of the adult illnesses. So going to be a little bit higher incidence of things like OCD, higher incidence of bipolar disorder. Schizophrenia can show up usually towards the tail end of adolescence. But again, as we talked about before, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, things like that are exceedingly rare. And even in adults, very rare, but especially in kids, and that includes teenagers, it's going to be really, really unusual for us to see that.
And I think it's important for parents to know that, because sometimes we worry right away that it's going to be this or it's going to be that. And sometimes it's just simple things.
Right. One of my favorite sayings that I learned in medical school is common things are common. And so it's going to be a lot more usual to see something that is regular, normal. Maybe it's an unusual presentation of that particular problem, but it's going to be a fairly standard thing as opposed to something that's really, really rare and unusual.
Right, right. Let me start by asking a couple of questions, I guess. We're recording this podcast and it's August, and I'm thinking of kids going off to school. My grandson's starting junior high this year, and you know, there's other kids that are heading into high school, but especially for those young adults going off to college, because you many times hear that that's where if somebody really has a serious mental health challenge, for instance, that many times that's where mania first shows up, or because they're out of their environment that they've always had as a child or whatever. Is that true? And secondly, what can a parent do to maybe help their kid prepare for any major changes that they might be going through as they start a new school year, or maybe it's a move to a different city or whatever?
I'd say that is true. When you've got things such as bipolar disorder or schizophrenia, that's usually where we're going to see it. Usually that is going to be because it's a combination of the stress and the age.
Mm-hmm.
So they are at just that right age where the situation is ripe, and it's, if you develop it, generally speaking, it's going to have developed at some point. It's just, what is that trigger? So you've got this really dry kindling, and where is that spark going to come from? Mm. And so a lot of times going off to college, that can be the spark. So what can parents do as far as preparing ahead of time? There's not a whole lot we can do. I mean, you can't wrap your kid in bubble wrap and keep them locked in the basement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you're going to have to send them out into the world. And so all of the parenting that you have done up till that point, that's what you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's not really anything extra that I can say, well, I'll give you a quippy little thing to do in an hour as you head them off to college,
right,
and that'll help.
Right.
Maintaining close communication with them, making sure that they know that you're
absolutely
there, that you're supporting. And if the worst happens, if something starts to develop, that you're talking to them regularly so you know what's going
mm-hmm.
on. You know
mm-hmm.
that something is starting to develop because they're not sounding mm-hmm. like them. They're not sounding right.
And to, if you talk to them about it, probably not to do it in a real confrontational way, right? Or how do you approach that if you're afraid as a parent that maybe something is developing? Do you just say, honey, it doesn't sound like you're changing, what's going on? Or do you ask questions? Or is there any good way to approach it where they don't shut you out?
You know, I think the best way, first of all, a good relationship with your kid. Hopefully you've mm-hmm. got that before you get into that situation. But
right.
that non-confrontational mm-hmm. approach, I tell people that, unfortunately, this reference is getting a little outdated, but I tell people, take the Columbo approach. That, you know, I've noticed that this is happening, and yet you say that you were here, but in fact, the cameras show that you were here. Help me to understand how that's happening.
Oh,
and
that's,
so,
yeah,
you know, kind of a...
I've forgotten that Columbo did that kind of stuff.
Right. And so having that kind of a conversation with, hey, I'm noticing that you're not calling me nearly as mm-hmm. much, and I love hearing mm-hmm. from you, but why is that? Because we used to talk once a week, and now I haven't heard from you. And
mm-hmm. I'm
just kind of
mm-hmm.
curious why that is, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not saying, hey, you need to call me more.
Mm-hmm.
That's
mm-hmm.
asking questions, and obviously
right.
you're leading with that a little bit, but at the same mm-hmm. time, kind of asking because you're wanting to understand.
Yeah.
And I think that comes across, that it's not something that you're judging or condemning, but that you're trying to understand. And I think that that is the approach to take, is that you're trying to understand what's going on.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Is there anything to be said about, as a parent, especially when teenagers, preteens, to really help kids? Life is full of a lot of stress. And to me, stress can cause physical problems. It could cause emotional problems. It could cause a mental health problem. Are there tools that parents can provide their children with, so to speak, that can help kids just deal with the pressure and the stress of school life in general? Many times I've pastorally counseled people through the years, I noticed that there's some people who really have an ability to deal with a lot of stress, and they do better than those who just fall off the face of the earth given just the slightest little issue. And it's like they never develop those skills.
Well, certainly therapists are going to have a wide variety of things they can work with kids, families, teenagers on to help with coping skill development. You know, if you're talking anxiety, a lot of times we're talking distraction techniques, get your mind off of it, help you to move past it. You know, in a larger sense, I think that the most successful families I've seen with handling things like this are families that do spend a lot of time together. Mm. You know, we talk about it so much in the media, and there's magazine articles and things like that about, you know, meal times and spending time together as a family, and that with our busy lifestyles, we don't take time out from that. Yeah. And it, you have to be deliberate, because the day will fill in.
Yeah.
And if you don't carve out that time, something else will butt in that will seem more important at the time. Looking back, you don't want to say, I wish I had spent more time with my kids when they were at home.
Yeah.
And so I think that that's a huge preventative type of thing, is that, again, I know I talked about it before, that relationship that you have with them, that's going to be built during those really young years. You're going to continue to foster that through the teenage years, making sure that they have hobbies, making sure that they have things that they enjoy doing, that they're pursuing. Again, that's going to be something. If you've got nothing but video games, then you've got nothing to fall back on.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you've got some other interests, you've got some other hobbies, you've got some social outlets, again, just kind of that well-roundedness. And sometimes kids are going to need a little bit of a push into those things.
Mm-hmm. What would you suggest to the parent who's a junior high student or high school student or whatever really needs to talk to a therapist, and they desperately want their child to work through some things or whatever, and they don't want to? They're just defiant about it.
Well, I'll have that happen a lot when people come into my office, that it's gotten to the point where the kid's miserable, they've been referred in, they're suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And we bring up the therapy, and the kid immediately gets this deer in the headlights look, like, oh no, they're going to dig, and they're going to know all of this bad stuff I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. And I don't want anybody to know that. I want to hide away.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tell people is, go try it once. It's not like it looks on TV. You know, you don't often, and it still is out there, but you don't often see the laying on the couch, staring up at the ceiling with the therapist at the head, talking about your mother and remembering the womb or any of that weird stuff. It's very practical. It's very hands-on. You talk about your day. You talk about what went right. You talk about what went wrong. And then you talk about, well, what could you have done differently? And it's just really practical for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what therapy is. And so what I tell them is, first of all, you know what it looks like? It looks like what we just did for the last hour, is I've been getting to know you. I'm just asking questions. You're telling me about your life. And that's kind of what it looks like.
Yeah.
And then number two is, you're not marrying them.
Yeah.
Go try it once. If you don't like them, then you don't have to ever see them again. It's a blind date.
Yeah.
Go try it out and see what you think. And sometimes that'll break that ice where they'll be willing to go try. And a lot of times they find that after they've spent that first hour with a therapist, they really feel better. They got a load off. They felt like it was a safe person, because therapists aren't going into it for the money. They go into it because they care, because they want to help to relieve some of that suffering. Mm-hmm. And so genuinely caring people, and most of the time you're going to get people that are very personable. There are exceptions to that.
Yes.
But it's going to be somebody, for the most part, that's going to be pretty easy to talk to. So a lot of times, if you can get them in there once, assuming that they're not dragging in there kicking and screaming. And that's the other thing I'd say I'd make a point of, is if the kid is adamant that they don't want to do what you think they should do, whether that's medicine, whether that's counseling, whatever it is, most of the time I'm going to side with the kid on that one. And I'm going to say, okay, draw a line in the sand though, buddy, saying this to the kid, not the parent. When is it enough that you want help? How bad does it have to get before you're willing to do what we're talking about?
Very good question.
Because right now you're telling me this is not that bad. Mm-hmm. If you don't want help, you're telling me it's not that bad. I can handle this. Now, the reason you're here is that your actions and what's been going on would say otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But we're going to back up here, and we're going to say, but you're telling me you've got this. You're telling me that this is handled. You're going to take care of it. Awesome. I love to hear it. Where's the line? Mm-hmm. How much longer does it go on? How much worse does it have to get? Mm-hmm. What areas of your life does it need to spill into before you're going to take it seriously and decide that you maybe do want a little extra help? Mm-hmm. And I think that applies again to the therapy, that applies to medicine, that applies to getting the school involved, that applies to pretty much anything that, that we're going to talk about in the office.
It applies to adults that don't want help.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. That's a very good question. That is a very good question. Talk to me about alcohol and pot and drugs and mental health issues.
Wow. Big subject and important.
Yeah, because adolescents have access to so much.
Well, and there is a much higher percentage in my clinic of those co-occurring problems with substances along with mental health issues. Now, you talk to the kids, and they're going to tell you about how wonderful it is and how safe it is and how they've got it under control and it isn't a problem. And yet here you sit.
Mm.
And it does fuel problems. But getting them to recognize that is so, so difficult. And part of that is the chemical changes that the drugs, the alcohol actually cause in the brain that somebody, I don't know where to attribute it to, so I'm probably stealing a line from somebody, but marijuana makes you not care about not caring.
Mm.
And yeah. I think that's exactly the problem with it, is it takes away that better reason that you have, that I can't count how many kids that I've sat that are smoking pot telling me how it's not a problem at all, but yet their thinking is clouded, their grades have gone down. They're withdrawing from their activities. They're not able to hold down a job. And yet it's not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And only weeks and weeks later, after it's cleared their system, I've had so many people sit in my office, look at me and go, wow, I didn't realize how foggy my thinking was until now I'm clear. And I can look back and I can say, I really couldn't even see it. And now that I'm thinking clearly, I can see it and I'm, oh my goodness, this is just so much different. But the problem is you have to get them to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard to get them to that point other than to force it.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about alcohol, we're talking about a depressant.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're talking cause and effect here. Some kids will drink to numb the pain, self-medicate. Some of them will figure out that if I drink, my anxiety goes down because it does do that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them will figure out that they just feel like they're more social when they drink and that really helps them. Sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes they start it more socially and then it develops into a depression. It develops into an anxiety. But bottom line is, it's a temporary fix and it's going to create a huge seesaw effect because you're taking a downer. And as soon as that's wearing off, then you get that bounce back up and then you drink again and you get the down and you just end up with this seesaw that eventually is going to suppress the whole system and can develop into a depression.
Mm.
Marijuana is going to be a little bit different. Biggest thing I like to hit with that, especially with my families, is there's been some research in the last few years that's come out that really hasn't made it into our drug education programs yet, especially to teenagers. A lot of it comes from other countries where it's a little bit more readily available and a little easier to study, because in the United States, we still have the problem that, well, I wouldn't call it a problem necessarily, but for study purposes, that marijuana federally is still illegal.
Right.
The federal government has still declared it off limits. Mm-hmm. Now they have decided that states are, you know, can decide. But if you're in Colorado as an adult and you go into a recreational marijuana dispensary and you smoke marijuana, you have just broken federal law.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
right.
Just because you're not being prosecuted for it doesn't mean that it still wasn't breaking
break
a law.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
An unfortunate fact about the whole situation right now. But regardless, it is, for teenage brains that are still developing, very dangerous.
Mm.
There are changes structurally that we can actually look at on brain scans that we can see differences in development of certain areas of the brain resulting in some cases, the development of schizophrenia.
Yeah, I've heard this. Yeah.
And the other big thing is that, again, this research is somewhat limited, mainly because we really can't do it. And for that matter, ethically, it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. But there's a drop in IQ that happens in teenagers. Mm. And we're not exactly sure how much or for how long the marijuana exposure needs to be, but it will drop IQ, and that change is irreversible.
Mm.
And so you can smoke yourself dumber, and that sticks. And so for the teenage brain, I worry so much about the kids that are smoking pot, thinking that there is no ill consequence.
Right. You know, everybody wants to make it sound so benign and it's not a problem.
Right. Oh, it's no worse than alcohol. There's far more fatalities or health problems from alcohol. Well, that doesn't necessarily mean alcohol's not a problem too, guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's comparing things. You know, if you say that, well, God made it, and so it must be good. Well, you know what? God made hemlock too.
Yeah.
He made nightshade. You're not going to go smoking either of those things. Mm-hmm. And so just because it's found out in nature doesn't mean that it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And there are things that happen to teenagers that are still developing that just simply don't happen to adults. Now, I have some feelings about that in adults as well, but not nearly as strong as teenagers, because with the teenagers especially, we just know there's a lot happening there with development, and we know to some extent that it's altering that development.
Yeah.
And that to me is a huge problem.
Oh yeah. Yeah. People just think it's so benign. I know of a young man where he's just not stopped smoking pot, and he had been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, and he's just gotten sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker and more unable to get better. And, you know, I think it's not only smoking yourself dumber, but maybe even smoking yourself sicker sometimes.
In some cases. One of the things people overlook is marijuana is a hallucinogen.
Mm.
And so
that's why the psychosis.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. That's what's kind of fueling it. And I've definitely had some kids that got psychotic from smoking pot. Mm-hmm. And they continue to smoke. They continue to be sick.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, they don't see that connection. The fact that I'm hearing voices and I think that the men in the black vans are driving by watching me has nothing to do with the fact I'm smoking pot. And it doesn't match up. Logically, anybody could point out to them why it's happening, but they are incapable of making that connection between the pot and what's going on with their thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hmm. Well, and as a parent, I'm sure many parents want their kids to stop, but how do you control it? You can't always control. I always have said that I wanted a GPS on my kids' car when they were younger, and then my wife said, "Do you really?" It was like, no, I don't know if I want to know everything, you know, but as a parent, there's only so much you can do, right?
Right, and so one of the things that I think you can do as a parent is you can get help.
Yeah.
And so getting in with a good chemical dependency counselor, having an evaluation done, getting a treatment plan put into place. The good and bad thing, I guess, as far as kids go, is they don't necessarily have to be willing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, step one, adults admitting there's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
With a kid, we can force some levels of treatment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so
because, like, if you're going to live under my roof.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so since we can force some levels, sometimes forcing that treatment means that we have just bought ourselves a month of sobriety.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes a month of sobriety is all it takes for the thoughts to clear enough for the kid to go, oh,
yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Look at what happened here. And now that I'm seeing this, whoo. That was scary. I don't ever want to go back there again. And I've had that happen.
Yep. Yeah. And that's good for parents to know. It's especially if you're a mom or a dad, just remember what Dr. Brian just said, because it can make a difference. 30 days of sobriety, enough time for the cloudiness to lift. And there are kids who get it then.
And you only have them until they're 19.
Mm-hmm.
And so you... or 18 in most states, actually. And so you do what you can while you have them.
Mm-hmm.
And every little bit may help. You may drive a wedge, but your job is not to be their friend.
Mm-hmm.
Your job is to help launch them into being a successful adult.
Absolutely.
And you give them every opportunity to do so. And I've told kids, I don't know how many times, that you may not be happy with me right now. And, you know, you may hate me, but I hope you have a really long life to continue to harbor those as opposed to have it cut short.
And in my thinking, parenting can become extremely strenuous during the teen years. It takes a lot of energy to hang in there with your kid and to just stay with it, you know, and have the relationship, even though they don't want to talk to you. They don't want, you know what I'm saying? I came to really appreciate something I heard Dr. Dobson say many years ago. He talked about the fact that sometimes you got to spend an immense amount of time with a child. You've got to have quantity, quantity, quantity to get about 3 minutes of quality. And it's really true. Mm-hmm. And boy, there were times where I wasn't sure I really liked my son all that much or my daughter all that much that I didn't want to be around him. I was forcing myself. But, you know, now today I can tell you, I like him. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about depression a little bit. Or, well, no, let's back up and do one other thing in addictions as we're talking about drugs and everything. You know, as a parent, I would just be worried sick about pornography. I'm praying for my my grandson all the time as he heads into puberty that this does not grab a hold of him, because it's just so prevalent and it's so accessible for kids. And from what I've read, it can really change brain chemistry for people also, or it's like a drug induced. 30 years ago as a pastor, I never had anybody come to me as a parent and say, my child is addicted to masturbation and pornography. And now I've had it more than once. And it's scary for parents, I think. Is it true that that can become just as much of an addiction, just like drugs or alcohol or anything else?
Yeah, this is one of the areas that you're going to probably be as up to date on this one as I am, because it's just not something I actively really study. I mean, I keep up on it to a superficial level, but yes, there are changes that can happen to the brain. We've shown that a lot of the reward centers get activated in a very similar way to what they do with drugs and alcohol. Mm-hmm. So there's certain ways that the patterns are reinforcing in and of themselves to actually increase the frequency and likelihood it's going to continue. And there's some thought disruption that happens with that too. But it's one of those areas that increasingly we are treating it as an addiction and very similar types of ways that we're addressing the problem. And, you know, there's support groups that are available out there too. And I'd say that that's one of the things that's really changed. And even from a faith-based perspective, there are a lot of support groups that are available even in local communities that churches are sponsoring for these types of problems. Now, where we're getting into the interface with teenagers, that's where it gets to be a little bit more difficult, because usually these support groups are going to be geared more for men.
For men, yeah.
I know here in our local community, we do have some availability of some of that type of therapy with a few folks that specialize in it. But that's really going to be kind of where the state of the art is right now, is just with some people that tend to really do more of it, specialize in it.
And so if your child maybe has these issues or you're concerned about it, to talk to a therapist in your community or to talk to a psychiatrist who might know of someone who specializes in that might be a good idea.
Yeah, because that's really an area that you can really go a lot of different ways with this. Yeah. And that's the problem, is in our society, we are allowing more and more and more. And because of that, now we as Christians are prudish.
Yeah.
And we recognize the dangers.
Right.
But society doesn't necessarily agree with us on some of that. And so that's where it gets to be an issue, is that if you get the right therapist, or wrong therapist, right. I should say, they may say, oh, this is normal, healthy behavior. Yeah, they're just exploring. Yeah. And sometimes that might be true. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they might just be exploring. Mm-hmm. They might just be experimenting a little mm-hmm. bit. But when it becomes an all-encompassing obsession where it, you know, and you look at the classic criteria for addiction, that you're increasing your use, that you're losing control of it, that you're spending more and more time either obtaining the substance or using the substance. If anybody wants to look it up on the internet, just search alcohol dependency criteria, and mm-hmm. it'll list off the criteria right there. And anywhere that it says alcohol, just substitute the words.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll kind of give you the idea of what it looks like. And so when it gets to be a problem like that, when it's really bad, then you'll get agreement. But then there's those shades of gray in between mm-hmm. where you can see that it's starting to get to be a problem where the wrong person may not necessarily be all that helpful for you. Yep. So that's where it's important.
It's so important to know if your child's going to see someone, who it is that they're going to see, and what are their fundamental beliefs or their biases that they have. Yeah, yeah. Let's just put in the clutch and change the gears. I want to talk about depression in teens. A long time ago, I remember going to a workshop led by a couple of therapists, and the thing that I remember out of the whole workshop was that, especially for boy teenagers, that depression does not show up as sad feelings or feeling blue, that many times, especially for men, I think it's probably true for men in general, anger is one of the ways that depression shows up.
That's a unique criteria in our diagnosis book, is in teenagers, kids and teens, the mood, the predominant mood state doesn't have to be sadness. It can actually be irritability.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're going to look for, yes, irritability, but okay, teenagers are irritable, right?
Yes.
And so how do you tell the difference? Well, as we talked about last time, there are other signs. There's other things going on. They're becoming withdrawn. Mm-hmm. They're not wanting to spend time with their friends. They're, mm-hmm. you know, isolating to their room more. Their appetite's really gone away. They're sleeping way more or way less than they used to. Their grades are starting to fall off a little bit.
Yeah.
They just seem like they're tired all the time. Things that just are really out of character, that all of a sudden you really see this abrupt change where things are really different for that kid. And you really see that abrupt shift. And it mm-hmm. may not have even been a specific episode. It may have been a really slow decline.
Mm-hmm.
And that's some of the more difficult ones to pick up on.
When you recognize that they're just not themselves.
Right.
Something's changed. Right.
Right.
Especially when there's anger there. As a parent, many times you think, well, I'll take care of that. You know? And discipline's not going to cut it if it's depression, right?
Right.
It's probably going to make it worse.
Well, it certainly isn't going to help anything if it's depression because, you know, telling somebody that's depressed to snap out of it is probably...
you better change that attitude,
right,
boy.
Right. And I think that, you know, that goes to show that just really misunderstanding of what depression mm-hmm. is. And I talk to people about that a lot, that depression is not sad. That is that the two terms, we've made them synonymous. I'm so depressed today. Well,
no, you're sad.
You're sad.
Yeah.
Sad is an emotion. Depressed, I wish we used a different word for depression in the term major depressive disorder, because we use that term as an emotion and it doesn't do it justice because people that have had major depression, it is not like anything else.
Right. For me, when I had a bout with depression, the two times that I've really had it very, very seriously, it was more, I was numb. I had no motivation, now I had sinking, terrible, horrible feelings also, but sad doesn't touch it.
And it's difficult to describe.
Yeah.
Because number one, everybody's experience is a little bit different. Yep. And number two, how do you describe the indescribable?
Yeah.
Words fail because it is an experience. It isn't something that you can just replicate, because how do you describe an emotion? How do you describe what the color blue looks like, you know?
Yeah, to a person who's never seen.
Right. Yeah. And that's kind of what you're trying to do. And so I think that that's part of it, is just understanding that, yes, a mood swing or sadness, irritability, things like that might be present. But again, you look for the physical. You look for the other pieces that are the other pieces of the puzzle to tell you there's something more going on here that's an illness. And not just the kid is, you know, had a bad breakup and is just kind of moping or, oh, woe is me, or they're going through a growth spurt or all the other things that we talk about. And some of that can be normal. And so where do you worry? Well, you worry when you see those changes. You worry when it's going on and on and on. Yes, breakups are normal. We should be getting over it. And if we're dwelling in that, that might have been the trigger. It might not be that they're still pining away. It may be that that was what sent them into that depression, that now they're not able to pull themselves out. And I talk to people about that a lot, that if you could pull out of this, you would have done it by now, because you don't like feeling this way. You don't like just sitting there and being in this stinky, dark, slimy pit. You want to climb out of it. And depression, you're not even going to look up to see if the light is above you, because it tricks you into not even feeling like there's anything else but the dark, slimy walls all around you.
Yeah, I really believe that one of the ways that I describe depression is that it was when my brain was so sick that it actually lied to my mind, and my mind believed there was no light, there was no way out.
That's a good way to put it.
Yeah, and it's the one lied to the other, and there was no way to be in my right mind. Now, that leads me to this more difficult subject, and that is that my teenager, my junior high student, may become suicidal. What if I'm worried about that as a parent? Dare I talk with them about it? We kind of talked about how I get them help, but I'm scared to death about that. So what do I do as a parent?
You talk to them about it.
Yeah.
That you are not going to suggest something to them that they have not thought about. You're not going to say, have you been having any thoughts of hurting yourself? And they're going to say, no, but that's an excellent idea. That's not how it works. And so you are not going to trigger something by talking about it. And there's all kinds of statistics out there about how many people before something happens have reached out for help. And you can be that person, and you can be proactive about it, because it doesn't necessarily mean that they reached out to a parent. It might be a peer. It might be a teacher. It might be their pediatrician. It might be a therapist, things like that, that they have reached out to. But you can provide those opportunities. And fostering that from a very early age, I see a lot of teenagers that they just really don't feel comfortable talking about those things with their parents. But you know what? As soon as that door's open and it becomes an item that's not taboo, it's amazing how comfortable you can get talking about some really weird things. You know, I mean, the things that I talk about with people in my office as an MD, it's amazing what you can get comfortable with. And a lot of times I'll just say, you know what, I've heard it all before, and I am an MD, so let's talk about your bowel habits. Let's talk about, I mean, it really, it really doesn't, for me, it's not uncomfortable to talk about that stuff at all, because it's so routine. Those kind of things can happen for families too. I mean, it is uncomfortable the first several times that you do it, the first several times that you do talk about it, but it gets easier. And if it is something you're really concerned about, it's worth it to go ahead and make that into something that can get openly discussed, so that they know that it's safe.
Yeah. And I think that's a very key reminder to parents, that you, by asking them if they've thought about hurting themselves or if they're suicidal or whatever, to ask that is not to suggest, you're not suggesting something where they go, oh, no, I've never thought of that, but that's a good idea.
Right.
I mean, it just doesn't happen that way. So if you have those concerns as a parent, you know, talk to your child. Or as you suggested, to provide them opportunities to talk to other people that they might be more open to or whatever. And yeah, because I think there's just certain things sometimes as a parent, you do feel like if I can just get them to the point where they're an adult, if I could just, you know, and so you worry. And that takes me to probably the last topic, and that would be, as we talked about in another edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health, there are no perfect parents. So don't beat up on yourself that, you know, you screwed up, you've messed up. I'm sorry goes a long ways.
Right. And as I said before, that there's no such thing as a good parent. Yeah. It's only a good enough parent.
Yeah.
And so there, you're going to mess up.
Yeah.
And there is grace for that.
Yep.
And realize that kids are very, very resilient.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how much they forget. It's yep. amazing how well they bounce.
Mm-hmm.
And they will bounce back from a yep. lot yep. of things. But getting that help when you recognize that you need it goes a long, long way.
Yeah. And love covers a multitude of faults.
Right.
And I had when my wife and I did our premarital counseling some 37, almost 38 years ago now, the doctor that we did it with, the pastor said, look, the two of you are not going to make the same mistakes your parents made because you don't like the mistakes they made. You're not going to make them. Mm-hmm. You'll just make new ones.
Right.
But just know you're going to make them. And then you do. And then, and when you're parenting, you make mistakes. The other thing is, mom and dad, know this, that God loves your child more than you do. If you combine your love together and everybody that loves your child, God still loves your child more. And he knows everything. And so when you're worried and you're up late at night and you're sick to your stomach about what's going on, pray. Pray to the Lord. Lift your child up to the Lord all the time, all the time, all the time. And God can intervene. And sometimes he just straightens it out. Sometimes he doesn't, he does it supernaturally. Other times he does it normally. But don't wait for it to become a huge issue. Do something in the physical, like get help, ask for help, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then ask the one who can make all the difference for help.
Right.
You know, if we would just pray as much as we worry sometimes, I think we'd be so much better off. Mom and Dad, let me tell you, there were times I wondered if my kids were ever going to grow up. I remember when they were in elementary school, I thought, oh my gosh, this is going to take forever. And then they had homework and they had this and there was this activity and that. And today our nest is empty and I wish I would have spent more time. I really wish I would have enjoyed them, but I'm enjoying my grandchildren. I've watched how the mistakes I've made and I've apologized for to my son and to my daughter, both of them have accepted that and forgiven me. Trust me when I say my mental illness, my bipolar disorder caused great pain for my children, terrible pain. But to own that and to ask for forgiveness is only to open up healing for the Lord to do. And so if you're out there parenting and you're worried sick, please know God is good. He can do things that you and I can't do. Even a good doctor can't do.
Right.
And so between what you can do in the natural and counting on him for the supernatural, love makes a big difference for a kid. Just
Absolutely.
Knowing that they are loved no matter what. Thank you so much, Dr. Brian, for being here. If you're a parent out there, you have questions or you'd like me to direct a question to Dr. Brian, or otherwise maybe some topic that you'd like to hear us cover in another episode or another edition of Fresh Hope for Mental Health, you can email me at pastorbrad@freshhope.us. That's pastorbrad@freshhope.us. Again, we're really glad that you tuned in with us today. And please watch for new episodes and editions coming out on a regular basis. And once again, please know there is always hope. You are not alone. There is always healing, and there's always hope because of Jesus.